Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us today for Live Dharma Sunday. Please note that if you have called in to listen to today's broadcast, then all lines have been placed on mute to avoid background interference. If you're listening from any of our Bright Dawn sites, note that it is not necessary to call in. You may have to wait a second or two for the loading and buffering process to complete, but if there is still no audio, please refresh your page. For more information about Bright Dawn and its activities and links to our social media sites, please visit brightdawn.org. Once again, thank you for listening to Live Dharma Sunday, and enjoy the talk.
Good morning and welcome everyone to Live Dharma Sunday for May 30th, 2021. Koyo Kubose here. So very, very glad you joined us on this Memorial Day weekend. Well, indeed, indeed. I didn't brush up on the history of Memorial Day. It was you would think we would honor all dead, but there's nothing wrong, I suppose, with special day to honor soldiers, even though we may be pacifists, we could support the troops. And we see this play out in public events. I remember back in 2003 when President Bush declared war. We went to war in the Middle East there, and a lot of community organizations, religious groups held rallies against the protests that we went into war in 2003, and I was participating in a rally like that, and some man's voice from back in the audience, this was outside in a park, and a voice from the back shouted, "Support the troops," and right away, somebody from the front said, "Yeah, bring them back." I guess that second person was prepared in a way to how to answer it when the person said, you know, "Support the troops," as though we were protesting against the troops. We're for the troops. Have no war. Bring them back. You don't have to have troops out there killing each other. So support the troops, but not the war. Huh? That was an interesting interchange where things happen, you know. Well, Memorial Day weekend, I'm out in the garden. It's a peaceful place, nature. And when I reflect upon how is it that I come to be working in this garden? What are the major karmic influences there? And I think of both my father and my father-in-law. These are major influences. It's not widely known unless you read my father's biography. It said, Reverend Gyomei M. Kubose. At this time, he was growing up, he was Masao Kubose. No Gyomei yet, which is his Dharma name given to him by his teacher later, after he became ordained. But he was, as Masao Kubose, young man, trained in landscape, planting vegetables and then loading them up on a cart and bringing them to market. That would what he did. And he'd have to do this, as I understand it, you know, load up the vegetables early in the morning when they're harvested and then pull that cart to the market. So he had this background about how to grow things. Okay? And I think a lot of Japanese and Japanese Americans, when they knew how to grow vegetables. And if they're in California or places where we've seen a lot of documentaries on this, it's a barren field, dry, maybe other people tried to grow things there. I don't know. Or maybe they look at the conditions and they didn't even try. But when the Japanese American came, they said, well, next thing you know, that whole field is green. And so they were good at it. And, of course, this raises aspects of competition, discrimination from the majority culture, white culture in that area. These Japs are, or maybe they even call them Chinamen, they're taking away our livelihood as producers of fruit and vegetables. Come down to jobs, competition, and so forth. And so many Japanese Americans, they had a background in, many of them did the nurseries, had nurseries, some successful nurseries over several generations. Then they're very rich, prosperous. Maybe they specialize in certain flowers or whatever. Successful nurseries in California by Japanese Americans. And so, in a way, part because of cultural reasons and so forth, my father had that background. And, later on he became a minister, but he never lost his love of putting his hands in dirt. I like dirt. whenever we went on a vacation anywhere or we visited relatives or friends, he'd get up early in the morning and he'd be out there pruning a tree, looking around, puttering in the yard. And many times he would see some wildflower or something, young plant. He said, can I take this? And he'd dig it up and would have some dirt on the roots and bring it home, plant it. I remember him always doing that, so I started doing that too. And it's very satisfying. You see something and then you bring it home, you plant it and it grows and you remember that trip. You remember those people. You remember their garden. And I remember I was visiting a family in, I was speaking in Canada and I was staying with the family and this family happened to have an award-winning garden. And we were talking about it and everything, and so she wanted me to take this plant home, one of these plants home that she dug up. And I said, well, you know, I know that I would have trouble at customs. And right away she grabbed the plant and she went out of the room. Then she came back in the room and with a gift-wrapped package. And she says, this is a package for your father, and you don't know what's in it. Pretty good, pretty good. Anyway, my father-in-law, Mr. Kimura, he was a professional landscape gardener his whole life. He had a panel truck, and I don't know how many clients he had, huh? And he'd go and take care of the landscaping. And you could tell he worked into his 90s. He loved his work. You're outside. No one's bossing you around. You're by yourself. You're your own boss. You got maybe a transistor radio in your ear. Yeah. And you're working with nature and the plants. Huh? You can see the results of your work, and you know, you're creating beauty. How good is that? You know, outside, no one to bother you. When he got too old to drive, but he still drove, and he started hitting, you know, parked cars and stuff. So Adrian's mother, yeah, my mother-in-law, she had to drive him to work, drive him around. You know, he loved his work. And so he had all the tools. And so when both parents were gone and the children had to clean out the house and everything, and, well, we got all the tools. I'm using my father-in-law's garden tools, you know, and I'm working away, okay, in my garden. How good is that? You know, my father-in-law, boom, under the wide sky, Central California here, the weather is good. Spring comes in March, and we're still harvesting in late October, you know. I appreciate it. I'm a city boy. As my brother said, I'm a city boy gone wild. I didn't know anything about landscaping, about growing anything, but nature does the work, most of the work anyway. And I talked to my uncles and relatives that are in the area here and start to learn things. And of course, you learn by doing. Except I always thought, gee, it's a steep learning curve, because if you make a mistake and you learn something, you got to wait until one whole year, one season before you put that lesson into effect, you know. And so you learn a lot about nature, about living with gophers and squirrels, and, you know, you learn about worms, you learn about composting, you learn how. Whenever I think about composting, I just cannot understand how you get all this yuck, garbage, this kitchen scraps, landscape waste, and you throw out all this stuff, put some leaves and brown, so-called brown stuff, you know, mix it with the green. Boom, you get this soil, this compost that's rich. You put it, grab it, some fistful, and you know, it's kind of like humus rich soil. That's a miracle. How does that happen? You know, wow. Well, I'm sure the professionals could explain the process, and we know there's nothing mysterious about the process, but to me it's a mysterious process. See? And I like it that way. Yeah. So I have a compost pile, and boy, because I got raised beds. Some of you, you know, may know my gardening situation, but I got 11 raised beds. Each one is 4 by 20, 4 feet by 20 feet. And I had to fill them up with soil, okay, compost, everything, add amendments, okay, soil amendments. Okay. Boy, and you plant, you gotta rotate your crops, what crops that can be combined together, grow together okay, which don't. You gotta keep an eye on things. You know, a little pest might happen, this and that. It's involved. But it's great. Okay? Nature has a lot of lessons to teach a novice and even experienced people to appreciate the process of growing things. It is a tremendous, tremendous thing. And so when I go out and I love to go out, even in, especially in this current rough emotional time in domestic situations and emotional turmoil times in your life, things are going on, the garden is waiting for you. You go out, you start getting involved, you got to concentrate on what you're doing. And something about being outside, something about being under that big sky, yeah. And being so fortunate that the weather is so good. I never take it for granted. Yeah, being a Midwest city boy, you know, I never appreciated gardening before. But due to my father-in-law, there I am. And it is a real, I don't know, I won't say soothing or gratifying or whatever those kind of adjectives are. It's certainly serene, tranquil, but you're working hard too, you know. And there's nothing wrong with sweat. And getting tired muscles. And I have to admit that I don't grow too many flowers. I do have some flowers along the fence in my garden area, but I'm a vegetable man, you know, fruit and vegetables. I'm kind of pragmatic that way. Flowers are nice to look at and so forth, but okay. But there's a lot of exceptions. I have some Rose of Sharon that I brought only 2 inches high when I visited my sister in Chicago, and they had some nice large Rose of Sharon bushes. They're sort of tree bushes. And then there were some little tiny ones all scattered around on the ground, you know. And so I just dug them up. They're only a couple inches high, and bring back, you know, a dozen or so. Yeah. And carry on, plant them, and a lot of them don't make it, as much care as you give them. But I got one that, you know, it was the strongest one, I guess, or whatever. But so I got these, okay, and Chicago was right there with me in the garden from my sister's place. And the Rose of Sharon, oh, they got beautiful flowers, you know. And so I've learned about cutting, to propagate by cuttings, by grafting. Okay? Not that I'm an expert or know a lot. I'm still a real novice. But if you're doing it, you can't help but learn a little bit about it. And I could see why there's a lot of gardeners around, you know. And to be able to share fruit, and you get a lot of stories. A lot of different things happen when you're doing a garden, you know. Some of you may remember, I planted some Martha Stewart sunflowers. These were huge sunflowers. They're probably 20 feet tall. Big old sunflower, maybe about 2 feet in diameter, round, huge and healthy. We had about three of them right now. And then one day, a good thing I took a picture of it, you know, because one day it came and all the heads were gone. It was just a stalk, 15 feet high, and the top is gone. There's no shavings or anything on the ground underneath. Somebody went up there and said, hey, look at all these sunflowers here. Holy, I'm going to take these home. Okay, I guess. Okay. Some suspicious people said, no, somebody came in your yard and took those. If you've ever visited our place, there's not much public access. We're on a very private road, cul-de-sac, and we got about a 300-foot driveway, gravel driveway from the road to our house and our area there. And there's no way that somebody, passerbyers, would see something and say, oh, you know. But anyway, I know. But sometimes when you see the way the stem or shoot is cut, you know, it's just like a knife did it. Not jagged or like it's chewed on. It's just sliced off, okay, at a little angle usually, okay. And so these animals, I don't know, sharp teeth or whatever. And so we got gophers. We got a lot of rodents and moles, whatever. And I remember in our front, not so much now. I don't know the real difference, but when we first moved here, and didn't realize, but the animals, they're always looking for nests, place to build their nest. Probably the female says, hey, I got some young ones coming along, says to the mate, that home built. So they go in, they find a nice place, like your engine compartment, kind of a warm place, all covered up. They could get access from underneath the car, and you don't realize it because you don't open up your hood and take a look all the time until you started to have problems. You got all that nesting material in there and your engine gets hot, you know, you could have a fire in there very easily. Yeah. And well, we did, you know, there's some stories there. So you start looking under your hood before you drive off sometimes. Okay. So we had that experience. And you talk to people and you say, and they all have some kind of a, I don't know what you call it, a wife's tale or, you know, some folk wisdom or whatever about how to handle that. Oh, put some, you know, juicy fruit gum in there. They don't like that smell, or use, you know, this kind of a lava soap that has a strong odor. I don't know. I never saw anything that was really effective, but everybody has these hints of things to do to try to handle these kinds of situations, you know. But eventually, somehow, you all learn to get along and they don't bother us anymore. So I guess these people are here to stay, and we don't want to mess around and they bother us, and so let's not bother each other. So we don't have any animals, rodents, making nests in our engine compartments, knock on wood. Okay. So, and there's a lot of different experiences that are, you always get a surprise. Nature always has more lessons for you, okay, when you're working outside in the garden and landscaping and watering. Gee, how should I fertilize? Well, I got to be organic or do this, do that. Okay. And I'll tell you, there's nothing like in the early spring, bare dirt, and you see these tiny little green shoots all in a row, you know, coming up. Hard to describe that kind of feeling, you know, when you see those tiny little shoots coming up. Okay. And so I grow, well, over the years, I've grown from A to Z, many, many things that, you know, you want to try it, you see. You know, I got the 11 beds, gee. So I've grown, you know, I got asparagus, some are perennial. Some asparagus, if you plant it, you know, it's a perennial, you know. That's it for you. You're set for 10 years at least. Every spring, boom. Thick, you know, thick stems of asparagus, tender. Whoa, you won't get it in a store. And the flavor, of course, you know. I remember people like, well, my nephew raised in the Central Cal, and when he visiting in the Midwest, he would eat the tomatoes in the, from the supermarket in the Midwest. He goes, what is this? You know, he's used to real tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. And so, anyway, I'm very fortunate that I haven't had real bad pest, and again, knock on wood and everything, but you got to keep an eye out and see what's going on, okay? Keep on top of things. And you try different things, okay? I've got melons, and the gophers, they love melons, so I have to figure out ways to keep them out of the raised beds, and I had some aluminum sheeting, maybe about 2 feet, had long strips, and then I nailed it down around the perimeter of the bed, you know, so that, whoa, I see, long-winded guy today. Support the troops, not the war. Get outside and garden. That's all for today's broadcast. Till next time, keep going, and you have a wonderful day. Thank you.